Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we are delighted to bring you episode 151, Diversity Awareness and Wellness in Action. But first, some mental health headlines. The Haug Foundation has co-signed a statement from the Ford Foundation that sharply criticizes the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision banning the use of race-conscious admissions in higher education. The court's decision in Students for Fair Admissions versus University of North Carolina and Students for Fair Admissions versus President and Fellows of Harvard College effectively ends affirmative action in higher education. It holds that the use of race-based admissions procedures is a violation of the 14th Amendment. The Haug Foundation joins numerous other funders and philanthropic organizations in denouncing the decision. To quote the statement, "The ruling threatens to return this nation to a time when education and opportunity are reserved for a privileged class. It endangers 60 years of multiracial movements to challenge our nation to live up to the ideals enshrined in our founding documents. The decision erects new barriers to build a society, new barriers to building a society in which everyone has the opportunity to improve their lives, communities, health, and education." I will provide a link to the statement in the show description. Obviously, this is a huge development, so I encourage everyone listening to read the statement and learn as much as they can about the ramifications of this decision. The month of July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. Throughout the month, the Haug Foundation will be highlighting stories that explore the efforts of diverse communities to improve community conditions that impact mental health, and what we all can do to help make that a reality. If you are interested, visit our website at hogg.utexas.edu/minority-mental-health. And in other news, the American Psychiatric Association, the APA, has released its own statement on the Supreme Court decision that I've already mentioned, saying that the ruling will, quote, "undermine the ability of colleges, universities, and medical schools to build a workforce of healthcare professionals that can effectively treat the increasingly diverse body of patients they serve." Building up the diversity and cultural competency of the mental health workforce has long been a policy concern of the Haug Foundation, and the APA statement reflects the deep concern that many in the healthcare and mental health fields have about the effect that this ruling could have. I will include a link to the full story in the show description. And that does it for mental health headlines. Don't be left out of the loop. Become a Haug Insider by subscribing to Mental Health Headlines. You can find a sign-up link on our main website at hogg.utexas.edu. DAWA, standing for Diversity Awareness and Wellness in Action, is an Austin-based organization that honors, celebrates, and empowers quote-unquote community frontliners and creatives of color through direct financial support, as well as culturally relevant mental health programming. In the process, they are also modeling a form of social entrepreneurship that shows how small organizations can make a big difference in ways that even a major philanthropy like the Haug Foundation can learn from. Their founder and director, Shaka Mahone, is in our studio today to tell us all about it. Well, Shaka, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm glad to be here.
So our listeners would love to know more about you and what it took for you to get DAWA off the ground initially. Yeah, I saw the face you just made.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, if you can see the face, I rolled my eyes, stuck my lips out. Man, it is, it's been a journey. It has been a journey. I moved to Austin in 2009, right at the end of 2009. Me and my wife, we have a hip hop group called Riders Against the Storm. And we moved here to Austin in pursuit of a career in music. We really wanted to take our ideas and our visions for ourselves as creatives, as musicians, to another level. We were at the time staying in a place called Providence, Rhode Island. Just didn't feel like we could get done what we wanted to get done. So we wanted to move to a city where there was some music industry going on, but didn't necessarily want to go to a New York, didn't necessarily want to go to an LA, because at the time, we were both coming out of kind of intense careers in community. So like doing a lot of work with young people, youth empowerment. I was a high school teacher. I ran an after school arts program, a lot of empowerment work. I was a social worker at one point at a community college. So we were kind of both just really worn out from that work. It was a little bit exhausting mentally. And so we didn't want to have to go to a city and like hit the ground and be hustling. So Austin kind of came out of nowhere. We came and visited, and you know, everything just felt good, to be honest. You know, it wasn't any like big lightning moment where it's like aha, but we just felt a little bit of relief. We felt like something could happen here. So we, you know, moved down here at the end of 2009 and started things off in 2010, and we've been rolling ever since. But around 2015, 2016, our careers were like solid, meaning solid for those of you that haven't pursued a career in ours. It's like you're not, you know, it's not like you're going from gig to gig, check to check. Like you're just, you know, it's like, shoot, if I don't get a gig this week, then I'm in trouble. Like, you know, we're out of that phase, and we're into a phase where, yeah, like we have a party that we did called Body Rock, where we had like 500 to 600 people coming out every month. It was like a check that we had written for ourselves. You know, it's like, you know, when you have a job and you have an employer, you know, the check is coming, you know, it's coming every 2 weeks. You plan your life accordingly. When you're a creative, you know, if you're not getting a gig or something's not coming around, you know, you could not have anything coming in for a whole month sometimes. So there's a lot of up and down with that. And so around 2015, 2016, that up and down, you know, we balanced it out and it felt good. And we felt like we could kind of think just a little more clearly. 2018, you know, we bought a home. And so reaching that milestone between like 2016 and 2018, started to think more about just Austin in general. You know, because when you're in the middle of it, you just got to do what you got to do. But, you know, when you kind of get in a more, you know, comfortable position, a more privileged situation where, you know, you have free time, you know, you have time to think. You know, we started to look around and, you know, just realizing how unaffordable Austin was becoming, how many challenges were, you know, emerging for us. I mean, we had come out of that, we knew it, but by the time we had kind of reached a sustainable point, Austin was still affordable. Like when we kind of reached our point of sustainability, we were living in a, you know, one bedroom apartment. It was like $750. It was right off of airport. You know, it was affordable. But you know, everything changed. I mean, it was changing since we've been here, but like everything really changed drastically, I felt, from my perspective personally, around 2016, 2017.
Right.
And, you know, the writing was on the wall when we got here, but like, it was like, oh wow, this is a different city now. 2016, 2017. And it became an entirely different city during the pandemic. I mean, I feel like after the pandemic, it was like, there's all these new buildings, there's all this new stuff. Like, where did this stuff come from? But in 2018, because I had time, because, you know, like this is a mental health organization. You're talking about mental health. Like, you know, our mental health was really put to the test. There was a lot of anxiety that we were dealing with because, you know, we came down here with this vision for ourselves and it took us 5-6 years to get there. So there's a lot of, you know, there's even times where, you know, anxiety attacks and, you know, you're dealing with depression because, you know, money just isn't you're not making ends meet. And so there's a lot of mental health things that we had to address and deal with in our climb to this point of sustainability. But anyway, when I got there, I started to basically just say, hey, what I can do right now is put $200 aside. If I see somebody and they seem like they're going through, or if I don't, you know, see anybody, I could just hit somebody up every month to say, hey, you know, do you need a little help? Or not even say that. Just talk to them and say, hey, I'm about to cash app you $200. Or not even say anything. Just talk to them and then send them money. those were things I was doing every month. So every month I was giving like $200 personally, from our resources. But then, you know, it would be a couple people a month sometimes, or three people or whatever. I would be here, I'd be out of spot, and somebody would just, you know, be down on their luck. You know, my car just got, you know, in the pound. I got to get to work. I live too far from the city right now. I have to have this car, you know, things like that. This is everyday stuff that people are dealing with. So, you know, I would say, hey, you know, I just gave you this $200, but like, let me, I'm not saying this to them, but like, okay, then I'm going to hit up Imani. I'm going to hit up David. I'm going to hit up, you know, all these people and like, see what I can raise in like a week, 2 weeks. So I'm like, yo, just cash at me $5, $10. If somebody needs help, I'm just going to send it to them. Like, and you know, I had that trust built in the community, so people would do it. So sometimes I raise 300, sometimes I raise six, seven, you know? And so that's what I was doing after a certain point. But then, after about a year of that, I was just kind of like, well, why isn't there a place that people can, you know, go to when they get in a situation? You know, because I'm doing this informally, you know, just on my own. Like, why isn't there some type of organization or something that just, you know, when people are going through these financial crises, which also cause mental health crises. We had a friend that we lost to suicide. We had friends that were, placed in, hospitalized, you know, for 30, 60, 90 days because of some of the stresses that they were under. So it's like, why isn't there a place when people are going to, they know that they can just hit up, call, email, whatever, and get some money? It was pretty much, that was the idea. And so there wasn't anything like that. You know, a lot of programs, you got to go through something. You got to take these classes. You got to do this. You got to do that. And like, when you need money, you need money. It's like, you can't even think, you can't even sit down and schedule, put your calendar together and show up for the meeting sometimes because you're trying to just figure out how to make ends meet, right? So I was just like, why isn't there a place that just understands you're creative, you're a social worker, you're a teacher, you're a healthcare provider, you're a service industry worker. We know what you're going through. Your work is not valued, highly valued in our society. Come here, get a little bit of help. That was it. That was the idea. And so in 2019, on my birthday, I threw a party. I figured, like, I know enough people where if I throw a party, at least 100 people are going to come out. Mm. You know, it could be 100, it could be 300, it could be more. But not trying to put a stress on the number, but just like, I'm going to throw some parties. It's going to be about this. I'm going to call it Dawa. Dawa means medicine in Swahili. And, you know, we're just going to be about this medicine, giving medicine to these people that are healers in our community, right? And so I threw the party. I raised $3,000 at the first party. My plan was to get to $10,000, give it away, and just kind of keep doing it. That was the just a general idea at first. So I set up an account with the Austin Community Foundation. I set up a Wix page, like a website, just telling what it's about, just some general information. I set up an Instagram page and a Facebook page. And that was it. So people knew that if they donated, this wasn't going to me. It's the Austin Community Foundation. It's a vetted organization. You know, just took care of that. And I was like, you know, we'll see what happens. I throw these parties and we'll see what happens. But that was September 2019. And, life happened. I just couldn't quite, like, figure out what my next thing was going to be. I was like, all right, we'll figure it out. And then the pandemic happened. So in between, like, September 2019 and the end of 2019, maybe, yes, $6,000 from me just posting on Facebook or posting on IG and just kind of generally just saying this is what we're doing. Pandemic happened. Before I knew it, we had $40,000-$50,000. It was like in like 3 months, like boom. And so in between that time and when we did our first distribution in June, I got a group of people together for nonprofit space, art spaces, different spaces of people that, you know, understood this mission. And I just kind of, you know, asked them to guide me, help me like figure this out. It's very informal, but like they were really influential in getting us ready to do that first disbursement. We did that in June of 2020. We gave out $40,000 in June. Since June of 2020, we distributed $263,000 in under 4 years. We became a nonprofit in 2022. That was not my intention at all. Mm. There's definitely a burden and a weight that comes with that. We have now 5 part-time employees. So there's like an increased need to raise money and to bring an income, not just to distribute it, but to, you know, pay for, you know, people's livelihoods. We're looking at moving into a space. There's rental costs. There's a lot of costs now that, you know, I wasn't envisioning when we started. But in order to have the impact that we want to have, it's like you have to kind of take these steps. So it's a catch-22 for somebody that really just wants to give away money. That's basically what I wanted to do from the beginning. Yeah. So we're doing that now, but we also have three other programs. We have a studio downtown where people of color can come and create podcasts like these for free. We also have a program called the Black Live Music Fund, which we've been doing a residency in Antones for the last month, celebrating Black Music Month, which the Black Live Music Fund is just about creating space for Black music and Black musicians to thrive in Austin. And then we have a program called Vision 8291, which is a partnership with South by Southwest and other companies to elevate and empower the grassroots organizations in Austin that are led by people of color.
Okay, so... Thank you.
Right.
Thank you very much. Is my mic level too low? Let me, it might be.
Okay.
That looks better. So I couldn't help notice the t-shirt you're sporting there.
Yeah.
Community is our greatest technology.
That's right.
Yeah. Could you expound on that a little bit?
I mean, before we had the stuff called technology, we actually, we relied on each other more. And so like there's nothing, when I use technology to, I set up a Instagram page, I set up a website, but really it was about community that built this thing. You know, it was my relationships with people. It was their relationship with not just me as a person, but what I'm doing in Austin that allowed Dawa to exist. So we want to just understand fully the power. Sometimes we put power in other things, but we want to start to understand the power that we have within our own persons to shape whatever reality is that we see or experience. So community to us is like first and foremost, and one of the key components of community that we really stress and it's embedded in everything we do is that we see you. If you live in a real community, people witness you, right? The good and the bad. But when you're down or you need something or they know who you are and they know how to speak to who you are, because I think in our society what happens is if you make a mistake, then you are your mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And we only see your mistake, right? But when you live in a community, people say, I know you made that mistake, but that's not who you are. I've been seeing you. You've shown other things, and we want to focus on that. We want to feed that. We don't want to feed the mistake. And so that's where community comes in. If we have strong community, then we have less of these challenges, the mental health challenges, right?
Yeah.
One of the tribes of one of my mentors, his name was Malidoma Somme, the Dagara tribe. When somebody was dealing with something, because this happens in indigenous communities, in all communities, people have breakdowns, right? They kind of lose themselves for a moment. If that person went off and just felt like maybe they were suicidal, maybe they didn't want to be here anymore, maybe they just felt like lost or confused or misunderstood, then they send somebody to that person to talk with them, right? If that person can't bring them back, they send another person. If that person can't bring them back, they send another person. They send people into, if they have to send the entire village to let that person know that they're loved or whatever thing it is that they're dealing with, then they're gonna do that. Well, we live in a society, this technological society, where nobody has time for that, right? But if we did, right, what a difference it would make. So really, community is our greatest technology.
DAWA stands for Diversity and Wellness in Action.
Diversity, Awareness, and Wellness in Action.
Okay, yes. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot about diversity and wellness nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
What does DAWA offer that's unique or scarce in the community?
Well, we just make the connection because one of the realities that we've created with these systems is that, like, in order for me to have shelter, I need money. In order for me to be clothed, I need money. In order for me to be fed, I need money. In order for me to get health care provided, I need money. Money is what, runs a lot of things. It really doesn't. We really do. But at the end of the day, I can't show up and just say, hey, I'm a good person. Will you feed me? People are going to look at you crazy. Or you can't say, oh, well, I'm a teacher. I work with all these kids in the community. Can I have lunch today? Right? No, they want money. Right? So wellness has to involve money. It has to involve financial investment and resources. If we don't if we don't apply that and take that out, then it's not dealing with the reality of, you know, the reason that a lot of people end up, you know, trying to escape, you know, through drugs or maybe some addictions, any type of addiction, maybe it's video games or whatever, just trying to escape. The reason that they do that is because they don't feel a connection. They feel isolation, right? And a lot of that has to do with just like with access to resources a lot of times. And so, you know, one of the most important resources that we need is money. So if we're not going to provide housing, if we're not going to provide food, then we need to provide money. And so wellness, you can't take money out of the equation. You know, you see these people, these, you know, self-help gurus and everything, self-care. They talk about self-care. Well, I can't. There's a lot of things that I can't do. There are things that I can do, and we don't believe in, like, you know, just being a victim, because you can find it if you want it, but it's challenging when you're under a lot of stress, and you don't know where to go, and you just don't feel like anything is possible, and money doesn't necessarily change all that, but it helps. And I've just had that experience personally because, you know, I have a master's degree, right? That doesn't mean that I'm smarter than anybody else, but like, at the end of the day, I'm not somebody that's just trying to freeload or just trying to take from anybody. But there's been times where I just needed money and people didn't understand that. They would just say, you know, get a better job. Why are you taking that low paying job, you know, doing that community stuff, right? And it's like, no, like, this is my passion. Like, I really enjoy this and I'm having an impact. So could you help me out with some money? You know, and people have this connection with it where it's like, you're lazy or you're not working hard enough or just get a better job. These are the things that I heard, right? And this is me personally. So I know what it's like for others, you know, that don't have the privilege of a master's degree, right? Or a college education. So these are just the things that I face, and having faced them, like, just wanted to do my part to make things a little better. And I think, you know, a lot of my mental health struggles, you know, the bottom line was money, like me not being able to feed myself. We had people, you know, come into our house and like literally fill our refrigerator with groceries. Community. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if they didn't do that, they would give us money, because what they were saying at the end of the day is, I see you. You are important. You are doing something important in our community. And you not having money doesn't mean that you're less than. It doesn't mean you should be ashamed. It just means that you don't have money right now. And so here's some money. Here's some food, right? But most people don't have that community. They don't have those people looking out for them. And so that's why we feel like that's where Dawa comes in and says, no, we understand. You don't have to explain anything. No, just come and get it.
Okay. The Hogg Foundation recently awarded DAWA a $25,000 grant to support the DAWA fund. What kind of difference are you aiming to make, or in general, whenever you receive any kind of like cash infusion like that?
Right. So with anybody listening, hopefully you go onto the website, or you're going to the website and you'll learn more. Our goal is so we just gave out $90,000 in May. We opened the application on Monday, and within 48 hours, we had over 400 applications. We had to shut the application down because we only had 300 slots.
Yeah,
we're giving away $90,000, $300 each. So there's a tremendous amount of need out here. The challenge that we face is that specifically with foundations, people don't want to give you money to give away money.
Mm-hmm.
They want to give you money for a program or this or that.
Yeah.
So we face that continuously in this environment in Austin, where, you know, they give you money for a program for like staff or rent or whatever. But, you know, people don't want to just give you money to give it away. So that's a challenge. So, you know, the Hogg Foundation stepping up and saying, here's $25,000. That $25,000 is going to go to, what, $300 each, 80 people, 80 plus people. That's what's going to happen. What we want to do is never have to shut down our giving. So those 80 people, we gave to 300. I know that we already have 80 people in on a waiting list. Those are the people that are going to get. We're not going to reopen it and say, you know, there's money here just to get people excited. We're going to, you know, go down that list. The first 80 that, you know, on the list, 83, whatever it is, are going to get that $25,000. And we're going to keep talking and keep telling our story and keep letting people know that we don't want to have to shut down our giving.
Right.
Right. So we've done four rounds now, but every time we give it away, we got to wait to, you know, build it back up.
Okay. So you seem to have an affinity for the term community front lines,
mm-hmm.
As a catch-all for the people you're trying to reach.
Mm-hmm.
What does that term mean to you?
Community frontliners are people that are going to do the work regardless. So when there's a crisis, these are the people that run towards it, right? These are the, you know, people in the community that are going to be doing the work regardless.
Sure.
You know, and we put creatives in that role because why do you have singing in church? Why? Because it does something for your spirit, right? It does something that just talking can't do, right? Just the sound of some someone's voice in a certain, it does something for us. And that's why it's not going anywhere. So these are people we need. We need them, right?
Yeah.
And so the role that they play in terms of touching our spirit and giving us inspiration as creatives, as musicians, they're on the front line. The social workers, the teachers, the people when the electricity goes out, the water, something happens. These are the people that are going to HEB, buying as much water as they can, and they're handing out of their trunk. Or they're organized, they're going in the neighborhood, checking on people, seeing what they need. These are the type of people that we feel like are undervalued. They haven't created some widget or some type of thing that they could sell that makes them important. But they are essential to the wellness of our community. And so we feel like if we look out for them, then our community is healthier. If they are struggling, then we already know there's a lot of mental health stuff going on.
Yeah.
We already know that. That's just documented. We all feel it. Pressure, anxiety, you know, depression. These are things that is happening. Who helps us with those things? That's the community frontliners.
Yeah.
The teachers, the social workers, the people that are going to stop and actually say, you know what, are you okay? You know what I mean? Do you know about this? Do you know about that? Can I help? That's the community frontliners.
Yeah, it's almost like whenever I hear the term compassion fatigue, you know, one way that you can sort of reinterpret that is that there is a community frontliner who's not getting what they need.
Right.
But then rather than see the issue as systemic, you know, it gets personalized as
right.
Compassion fatigue.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
it has a lot of currency, like within social work.
Exactly. So like and a lot of times, people talk about self-care and it's like self-care so they can go back to work.
Yeah.
Right. If it was up to me, like these people would get paid so much more.
Yeah.
And I think we would have such better results because at the end of the day, what you get, I face this myself, in these roles is like you start to question, like, is this worth it? No matter what, because and you can't make ends meet in a city like Austin where the prices of everything is rising. They just had a KUT article that said you have to work like 170 hours or something if you have a minimum wage job to pay for a one bedroom apartment. It's not change. The wages are not rising at the cost of living. And step with the cost of living. So if it was up to me, man, these people would get paid the most. You know. Because everybody wants to, when things happen, when someone has a breakdown and there's a shooting or there's a this or there's a that, everyone, wants to talk about everything except the fact that, people aren't getting what they need and they're suffering from mental health. And the people that care about those things, they don't get the pay that they deserve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so it just is what it is, and I'm doing my part, and I'm working to develop relationships with people like Hogg Foundation, with organizations like the Hogg Foundation, and continue to say, hey, like, let's continue to work together. Hopefully, this isn't the last time that we work together, and we can find ways to you know, create a more healthy Austin, you know, and finances are a part of that.
Okay. What do you consider to be the most joyous as well as the most frustrating aspects of being a Black Austinite?
Well, the most joyous, I think, is just, I have a son now.
Sure.
You know, he brings me joy every day.
How old?
He's 16 months now.
Oh, my.
You know, he brings me joy just watching him just light up. And I think that he reminds me that, you know, all these things, all these labels, everything is made up. And it's really like we all come here with a, what people may call a soul or a spirit. We all come here with an energy that sometimes, a lot of times is oppressed or suppressed or controlled, or, you know, we lose our way from like our original kind of what we come here with, just through rules. People tell, oh no, you can't be that, you got to be this, da, da, da. You know, people impose their limitations on you. But and I think race is like, you know, something that's been imposed on us as an idea.
Yeah.
That somehow being born with melanin is a limitation. But I see it as just like, it's beautiful. And so like when I look at my son, I see myself, I see my ancestors, my grandfather, my great grandfather, you know, just my whole lineage. And it brings me a lot of joy knowing that, you know, we're here, we're strong. We're, you know, contributing to the next generation, and just enjoying that. So, you know, that brings me a lot of joy. My son, you know, obviously he's Black. My wife is Haitian. And yeah, he brings me a lot of joy. I think what kind of was hard maybe about being Black in Austin is I found it just like a lack of leadership.
Mm.
And what I mean by leadership, it's not, you know, a lot of times we want to say, well, you know, white supremacy or patriarchy are the issues. But I think there's a lot of things that we do within our own community, which are related to those things and kind of learn from those things. But we have to, there's just like a lot of people playing roles and not really leading. And so I think when I think about some of the challenges that I faced, it's people not really creating opportunities for the ideas and the visions that I have. And so all I do with that is like, I don't do that in my life, yeah. Right? So when I see someone young that has ideas and maybe a little disruptive or a little different, maybe even loud or whatever, or obnoxious to some people, I want to move towards that. I want to, because that is something that's going to change what we're dealing with. And change isn't comfortable. It's not about sitting in your bubble and, you know, going to brunch and feeling good every day. You know, you have to kind of feel like things aren't right, to change something. And I feel like a lot of the leadership, here, are very comfortable. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, but I found that to be very challenging. I found that because, you know, a lot of people may think, well, white people don't want to hear what you have to say because you're mm-hmm. talking about people of color, you're talking about the failures of the system, you're talking about these things. But there's also, like, you know, Black people that don't want to hear what I have to say either, and don't create opportunities for me either, because they are fine the way things are.
Yeah.
And so that's been, you know, that's been a consistent challenge. I'm feeling like, you know, I'm someone that's done a lot in the city, and feel like sometimes they don't want me in the room. But, you know, that's okay because, you know, Black, white, or otherwise, people want me in the room. And so it's just about a coalition of the willing, the people that hear what I'm saying, and just working with that. But I can't say that, you know, talking about something, I forget the word that you use, joy and the other word, but, you know, that's been a frustrating thing for me, is just knowing that, like, we could do so much more if the leadership was different.
Sounds like you've got a lot going on.
Yeah.
How do you make time for your own wellness, and what does that consist of for you?
You know, that is something that's a work in progress. I think for me, I'm definitely built different than most people. I think I can do more than like most people. Like I have a capacity that's different, right? And you know, I think I realized that early on. But there's challenges that come with that, and sometimes you take on too much. And so when I do feel like, you know, I'm going beyond my capacity, first of all, I have a wife that's always like checking me. She's always like making sure, like, are you sure about that? You know, do you really have time for that? Stuff like, you know, just really making sure, like, you know, I'm looking at myself. But whenever I feel like, you know, I'm kind of overloaded in my capacity, I just rest. That's the main thing that I do, is I rest. I do yoga. I'll go hiking. I'll go just in the water. And, you know, water does a lot for me. Just being immersed in water, swimming, just hanging out. And there's a lot of different water holes, you know, in mm-hmm. Austin that are really great. So, you know, those are things that I do. I'll go, you know, just go out to eat by myself, you know, just like have a nice meal. You know, I recently, in the last 3 months, I started taking Fridays off completely from work. So I just work Monday through Thursday. So I have a long weekend, because I'm in control of my schedule. So like I'm constantly checking in, and I think there are times when I'm doing very well and there are times when I'm doing not so well. And I think when you're not doing so well, you know, the best thing is just to be honest with yourself. Don't lie to yourself. And I think that I'm very honest with myself. Like, I know when I'm not doing well. And I hopefully with, sometimes it's not immediate, sometimes I just got to like recalibrate and get back to healthier practices, right? But one of my main things is just rest, and just like just taking the rest that I need and making sure I'm getting to sleep, because that's when things start to get hard, when I'm not sleeping enough.
Okay. Where can people go to learn more about your organization and how they can help?
I would love for people listening to this podcast to go to Dawa Heals, DawaHeals.org. You can find us on Instagram at Dawa Heals, DawaHeals. And I would just encourage y'all to make a donation, you know, become a subscriber. You can do that through the donation, a monthly subscriber. I want to just say that, like, one of the slogans for the Black Lives Music Fund is, there is no Austin without us. And so that's about Black music being like the main, you know, just being the fuel for the city, right? Blues, rock and roll, jazz, like all those genres and everything really built the city and made it a music city. But also, there's no Austin without us, those that are taking on these roles. The teachers, the social workers, the healthcare providers. So, like, if your life has been touched by someone like that, whether they be a person of color or not, consider that. Take a moment and understand that specifically, Austin is displacing people faster than any other city in the country. It's one of the most economically segregated cities mm-hmm. in the country. We're not going to shift any of that without investment. You know, and so one of the things that we believe in doing is being creative about how we do that. But we're going to need more investment and more support so that we can give back to the specific community. So check us out, DawaHeals.org. Email us, Dawa@DawaHeals.org. And we hope to hear from you. We hope you'll get involved. We hope that this resonates with you and that we can work together to make a better Austin.
Okay, great. And that's a wrap.
All right.
This isn't the first time that we have explored the mental health needs of community frontliners. Back in episode 69, we took a look at some community frontliners who are especially dear to Austin, that being musicians. Musicians regularly encounter situations that strain their mental health. The late nights and the venues can be difficult on the body and the mind, and this is especially so for those who already have issues with substance use. And add in the lack of job security and stability.
Work-life balance is basically non-existent. And family support, when it is there, can be little or strained. Here is one local musician's take on the situation.
I think there's some figure like 100 people move to Austin every day, and many of them, I know a lot of artists and musicians are moving to Austin daily because they want to partake in this wonderful, vibrant community that we have here and the opportunities that exist and the organizations that support musicians. But what that makes happen in the real, you know, feet on the ground, what's happening in the city of Austin with musicians is that there are a lot of musicians that are wanting places to play, and they're more and more frequently willing to pay for almost no money, you know, that sort of thing. And so then the people that have been living here maybe as a professional musician for many years, you know, it's almost like there's a little bit of a displacement that can happen. Mm-hmm. If someone's too expensive, well, they're like, you know, we don't need to pay that much for mm-hmm. your band anymore. We're going to go ahead and get this other band who's willing to play for whatever the tips might be.
Yep.
And people are still like putting out damn good work on the cheap.
Yeah, exactly. And they're funding their own records.
Yeah.
Oftentimes there's very little money coming into a musician, but musicians are almost paying mm-hmm. to be a professional musician because they have to get funding through other sources like their families and their friends and their fans. And so it's obviously a job that does not have any job security. There's no stability mm-hmm. with it, and you're always having to work.
You know, I think the thing that I personally have learned as a clinician, I never really gave much thought to the fact that it's so stressful and it's a constant, ever-present thing of having to be out there. I go to concerts before I was a clinician and was just like, okay, I'm going to go see so-and-so. And it never dawned on me that at Antone's or at Continental Club or whatever, when you got a band of 5 or 10 people, you're not walking away with very much money. And so it's an expensive town to live in. It's incredibly stressful to stay here, yet they want to because they love this community and they love what they do.
The voices that you just heard belong to Vanessa Lively, an Austin area musician, and Patsy Baressa, clinical director at the Sims Foundation, an Austin nonprofit that provides mental health and substance use services and resources to local area musicians. I've included a link to the full episode in the show description. You can go straight to it from your device. And so finally, and in the spirit of Dawa, let us tip our hats to the community frontliners in our lives. The mission of the Hogg Foundation is to transform mental health in everyday life. And there is a phrase that we are fond of using to capture that possibility. And that is the places where people live, learn, work, play, and pray. Well, honoring that commitment means holding space for those who do the work of building those spaces. You know, whether it's teachers, coaches, civic leaders, barbershop employees, faith community leaders, and yes, the behavioral health professionals that we are all familiar with, the social workers, the psychologists, the counselors. And so, you know, this July for Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, I implore everyone to either seek out or renew acquaintances with the community frontliners in your life. Find out what it is that they need and how it is that you can support them. And that does it for this episode. We're glad that you could join us. Production assistance by Kate Rooney, Daryl Wiggins, and Anna Harris. Music provided courtesy of Shaka Moore and Dawa Studios. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Leave us a review, subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. Taking us out now is Anna's Good Vibes by our friend Anna Harris. Thanks for joining us.